Today's reading comes from Numbers, chapter 32, verses 1 through 6. Now the people of Reuben and the people of Gad had a very great number of livestock, and they saw the land of Jazer and the land of Gilead, and behold, the place was a place for livestock. So the people of Gad and the people of Reuben came and said to Moses and to Eleazar, the priest, and to the chiefs of the congregation, Ataroth, Dibon, Jazer, Nimrah, Heshbon, Elealeh, Seba, Nebo, and Beon. The land that the Lord struck down before the congregation of Israel is a land for livestock, and your servants have livestock. And they said, If we have found favor in your sight, let this land be given to your servants for a possession. Do not take us across the Jordan. But Moses said to the people of Gad and to the people of Reuben, Shall your brothers go to war while you sit here?
I don't know if you've ever worked on with a team before. Some folks, their vocation is something where they usually work alone in many cases, and it seems like most of the work I've done, it's almost always been a sort of a team type of a situation, a crew, a work crew or something like that. And I think if there's anything that holds back or annoys a work crew, it is when someone doesn't pull their weight. It's when someone who, and they need to, because the rest of the group, when that doesn't happen, winds up having to take up that slack. They've got to do that work too. And so it annoys the people who are doing the work because, you know, here this other person is, they're getting paid whatever they're getting paid, but they're not contributing. And so it annoys those people. And in anything else in life, that's really not that big of a deal. It's a poor choice. I would never recommend it. In fact, I would say that it's wrong to do. But I would tell you that except for spiritual matters in your life, there's really everything else you can fail at. You know, you cannot be a good whatever it is you can imagine, whatever vocation. You cannot be good at it. And that's not going to cost you your eternity. It's not going to cost you your salvation. If I'm a plumber and I'm not a very good one, well, there's going to be a lot of water in my life that I don't want. A lot of trouble for other people, things like that. I mean, that's as bad as it gets. It's frustrating and it gives you a headache, but it's not that bad. What if I'm not a good bulldozer operator? Well, if I'm not a good bulldozer operator, somebody's probably going to get knocked down. You know, something's going to be flat that's supposed to be standing. So those things, as bad as they are not fatal. But there are some things in life when we hold back, when we restrain ourselves, when we don't contribute the way we ought to, catastrophic things happen. And when you walk out in this world, I hope you know that you're an emissary of God. Christians in this room today, you're ambassadors. You're His children. Wherever you go, whatever you do, wherever you're at, people are watching us. And so we need to be aware that not only are we God's people on Judgment Day, but we're God's people right now. And I think sometimes folks struggle with that. Well, I know, but I'm just in, and all kinds of things occur. I want to use this as an example. I came across this passage early on in Bible study, and I always there's one statement that Moses is going to make here, and we're going to talk about that. That's sort of the theme for what we're talking about this morning. But what's happened is we have a group of people who for decades have been wandering through a desert. The desert is hot, it is dry, it is dangerous, and not only that, they've been fighting wars. They've fought many battles. And so you know they've got to be tired. They've got to be worn out. And I understand that. And in fact, I will tell you that most soldiers on the battlefield will tell you there are two things that are ever present with every soldier. One is fear, and the other is fatigue. Both of those things will always be there. For some reason, when we go to war, we don't send well-rested people. We keep them up for a week and a half, and then we send them. And I know that's the way that it works, unfortunately. Well, in life, you're going to be tired, and sometimes there are going to be some things you're going to see, you're going to deal with, that there's going to be some fear involved. And we have to have a faith that carries us through that. But let's take a look at this circumstance. We read verses 1 through 6. I appreciate Leighton reading that for us. And so Gad and Reuben come forward, the tribes of Gad and Reuben come forward, and they say, You know, we've been with you guys the whole way, and we're tired. Our children. This is what's interesting. They're going to talk in a minute about the fact that they want their children to be saved. And when you initially hear that, if you're not careful, you can say, well, of course they want their children to be safe. Let me tell you something. There are times when we really want children to be safe, and there's times when adults hide behind children as an excuse. And so, anyway, all that being said, Gad and Reuben come forward, and this is their initial plea. They say, you know what? We've got so much livestock, as if nobody else has any. We've got so much livestock that if we cross this river, the Jordan, and we try to get over there, we're going to, and they would likely have lost some livestock. That happens in water crossings. You ask anybody with a herd or a flock, when it comes to water, they get really nervous. They don't want to cross it if they don't have to. That's okay. It's common sense. And you have what you don't lose in drowning, those that make it across, you have some that wash downstream. You got to go down and recover them and bring them back. And you got to do all sorts of things, and I'm not here to teach you how to be a cowboy. But I'm telling you that their reasoning and their excuse rings with a little bit of truth. But there's a greater principle here that we're going to find pointed out here in just a minute. In fact, when they're telling Moses this, they're giving him this big excuse. They requested to be given the land that they were already in as their possession. I want this land. Gentlemen, have you ever walked into your living room and your wife says, what do you think about how this furniture looks? What's the correct answer? It looks great right where it's at, you know. Otherwise, what's going to happen? You get it all moved around. I have a good friend, Buddy Donnelly. He used to work night times. He'd work in the evening. But he would come back before the sun was up. And his wife liked to change the furniture around like all the time. And so she just moved it to all kinds of different locations. And Buddy said, I was often coming home falling over, because he wouldn't turn the light on. So he'd fall over an ottoman or a coffee table or, you know, something was in his way that wasn't there when he left. You know, it was a different scenario. But that's a little bit of laziness on our part, truthfully. And to be honest with you, for Gad and Reuben, their motives were even more selfish. I don't know that they were necessarily as lazy as they were concerned about their losses they would incur for continuing to help their family, their brethren, go into the promised land. Because they were going to they feared some losses. Remember, we've gone through this. There's Nephilim living there. There's giants. There's all kinds of bad reasons why we need to stay away from going into the promised land. And you guys go ahead, y'all have fun. God is with you. We're going to stay here. Well, anyway, Moses was dejected by that. In fact, he says to the sons of Gad and the sons of Reuben, shall your brothers go to war while you yourselves sit here? You might have seen the movie It's a Wonderful Life with Jimmy Stewart. It's an old movie. It's an old Christmas movie. A lot of people this time of year will have seen it. Jimmy Stewart, as an actor, at least in an article I read, changed a lot just before that movie took place. He changed because he volunteered to go to war in World War II. He was actually a pilot, a bomber pilot. He was so good at what he did that they kept him back in the training command. Some people, he didn't want that though. He wanted to be out in the midst of the action, in the midst of the fray like everybody else was. And so he requested transfer after transfer after transfer until finally he became a bomber pilot. And he flew. Now people who know him say this about him. They said that once he took that job and he came back from the war, he was never the same person. I believe that. I've just known too many people, men and women, who have gone into that kind of environment and they come back and they are different. They are changed. For good reason. To be honest with you, war is not what we're built for, but that's another thing. But Jimmy comes back, and when you see in that movie, It's a Wonderful Life, and you see these moments of stress, these moments of horror, these moments of dejection and depression, those were real for him. And that's why they kept him in the movie. Those were actual real reactions he had. And so if you ever, I'm not telling you to go out and buy it or anything, but if you happen to see it, and you see his reaction, if you see he's a very sad man in that movie and a lot of the time, that's him as a person. And I can tell you that Gad and Reuben, the sons of Gad and Reuben, when they came to Moses, they were tired, they were scared, they had done all they were going to do. They had had enough. And they said, "We want to stay here. We don't want to go over there. We're tired of fighting. We're tired of dealing with these people who constantly don't want us." Do you ever go somewhere and find folks don't want you there? Well, you're not preachers, so you probably don't know about that. But a lot of times I don't even tell people I'm a preacher, and it's not because I'm trying to hide anything. But people assume things and make judgments and all kinds of things. If you don't tell them and you just talk to them and you just communicate with them, a lot of times everything's fine. But if you tell them you're a preacher, all of a sudden they act differently. You know, and it's not always so positive. But anyway, Moses makes a response to this request in verses 6 through 15. Moses said to the sons of Gad and to the sons of Reuben, "Shall your brothers go to war while you yourselves sit here? Now why are you discouraging the sons of Israel from crossing over into the land which the Lord has given them?" Now Moses is already telling them the damage that they're doing. He says, "You're already discouraging people from doing the work of the Lord because you're going to sit here, because you say you want to sit here. This is what your fathers did when I sent them from Kadesh Barnea to see the land." Moses is saying, "This is no big surprise to me. This is the same thing your daddies did when they came back from the land. They didn't want to go there. They didn't want to take the chance and go over there. For when they went up to the valley of Eshcol and saw the land, they discouraged the sons of Israel so that they did not go into the land which the Lord had given them. So the Lord's anger burned in that day, and He swore, saying, 'None of the men who came up from Egypt from 20 years old and upward shall see the land which I swore to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob. For they did not follow me fully, except Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, the Kenizzite, and Joshua, the son of Nun. For they have followed the Lord fully.' So the Lord's anger burned against Israel, and He made them wander in the wilderness 40 years, until the entire generation of those who had done evil in the sight of the Lord was destroyed. Now behold, you have risen up in your father's place, a brood of sinful men, to add still more to the burning anger of the Lord against Israel. For if you turn away from following Him, He will once more abandon them in the wilderness, and you will destroy all these people." So Moses is not pleased. I don't for one second believe that in Moses' mind he's upset because he thinks his army is now compromised. That's not his point. That's not even what he says. If a military commander, if he has three battalions and one of his battalions walk up to him and say, "Well, you know, we like to stay here in the rear area, we'll guard the ammunition and the food while y'all go out there and handle business." I can tell you right now, a brigade commander is going to be beyond upset, and he's going to have his unit compromised. You can't do that. But who was winning the war for these people? It wasn't the people. It was God who was winning the war. They could have won the war with one tribe. That was not the point. The point was these people had traveled and had been promised a reward at the end of their travel. And they didn't want to make the whole journey. They wanted to stop where they were. And so Moses is upset by this. In fact, he reminds them, your fathers did the same thing when it came time to go into the promised land. They didn't want to go. They came back and told lies, discouraged the people of Israel, and it cost us a generation of men above the age of 20, except for a couple that didn't get to make that trip. Come all this way, walk all this way, and then you don't get to go in. There's a amusement park in Virginia called King's Dominion. And they have different versions of it in other parts of the country and around the world. It's kind of like Disneyland, but on a lesser scale. But anyway, the parking lot is enormous. It's about the size of New Haven, I think. And if you don't get there right before they open, you're going to be parking back and all the, they have animals and letters, and you're going to be way, way, way back in the zebra section. And the only thing wrong with the zebra section is it's at the end of the parking lot. And I'm going to tell you something. Walking through that parking lot, you think you are never going to get there. And so you walk. If you're young, park in the back. Old folks, y'all need to park up front. Y'all park with me. But you walk and you walk and you walk and you feel like you're never going to get there, and you walk and walk. I can't imagine walking all that way, driving all that way to get there, paying all that money for the tickets, doing everything you got to do, and then getting to the gate and going, well, I don't think I want to go in after all. I know if somebody was with me said that, oh, you're going in. And you're going to ride the biggest, nastiest roller coaster they got. You're going. We come this far. We ain't going back. You forget that. I think, can you imagine what these people have been through and the losses they've taken and the things they've witnessed, babies being born, wars being fought, all kinds of things going on in the lives of these folks and people getting married and all these sorts of things happening. What's interesting to me about this is Gad and Reuben's flocks grew so large while they were doing all this. Most cattlemen will tell you that under stress, when you're moving a herd, that's generally speaking, they don't necessarily grow enormously unless it's a really, really long trip. But theirs grew enormously. Everybody agreed they had a lot of animals. Nobody looked at him and said, oh, y'all are making that up. You got two sheep. Come on. They didn't say that. So when Gad and Reuben come forward and they present this excuse, one of the things that Moses points out in his response here is, it's not about the sheep. Just not about that. It's not about the things that you're going to point out here a little bit. It's because you don't want to go. Now, I'll be honest with you. If I had been on the receiving end of Moses' response, I would probably have felt, you know, hey, Moses, you're being a little harsh, buddy. Being a little tough. We just asked if we could stay here. But Moses' point is glaringly obvious. You're going to sit here while your brethren go over there and take that land? You're going to sit here and do nothing. And you're going to sit on your hands and tend your flocks and protect your children while the rest of us, our children are going to be in danger. Our flocks are going to be in danger. Everything we got is on the line. But you're going to sit here where it's safe. Well, I'll tell you what, that's what's otherwise known as calling them out. Pointing it out. Busted. Yep. That's what happened. So, I don't know what happens. Apparently, they talk. This negotiation is made. And in 32 verses 16 to 23, this is what happens. And they came near to him and said, we will build here sheepfolds for our livestock and cities for our little ones. Oh, because, you know, it was about the little ones. But we ourselves will be armed, ready to go before the sons of Israel until we have brought them to their place, while our little ones live in the fortified cities because of the inhabitants of the land. We will not return to our homes until every one of the sons of Israel has possessed his inheritance. For we will not have an inheritance with them on the other side of the Jordan and beyond, because our inheritance has fallen to us on this side of the Jordan toward the east. So Moses said to them, if you'll do this, if you will arm yourselves before the Lord for the war, and all of you armed men cross over the Jordan before the Lord until he has driven his enemies out from before him, and the land is subdued before the Lord, then afterward you shall return and be free of obligation toward the Lord. And listen to this, toward Israel. See, before they just wanted land. They just wanted a place to stay. Whether they were cowards, I don't know. Whether they were lazy, I don't know. But I'm telling you, that was their request. But this is what happens as a result. They're going to go to war, and they're going to fight. But now, he says, you're going to be free of your obligation toward the Lord and toward Israel. And this land shall be yours for possession before the Lord. But if you will not do so, behold, you have sinned against the Lord, and be sure your sin will find you out. So Moses, he doesn't really let them off the hook all that easy. They talked about this, and they did all this, and they sat around, and they hemmed and hawed and wringed their hands, and oh, well, you know this, and all these excuses come up, and Moses said, okay, you guys say you're going to go to war, and you're going to be in the front. So you're going to stand on the front line. You're going to fight this war from the front line. And when it's all said and done, you can come back home. Before, they were just like everybody else. If they'd have just gone and just participated and just contributed to the best of their ability, none of this would have been an issue. And who knows that their blessing wouldn't have even been greater. But to be shamed in front of all your people, in front of all the nation, it'd be like the United States having two states saying, we're not going to participate, we're not going to do this, good luck guys. That's not the way this works. It doesn't work that way. So you have this situation for these guys, and Moses lays out the circumstance. I hope you can see that Gad and Reuben really paid a real price for what they did. They got the land that they requested, but they didn't get what they wanted. Because ultimately what they wanted was not to go. And they still had to go. So what's the application for us today? In 2 Corinthians 10, verses 3 through 5, for though we walk in the flesh, we do not war according to the flesh, for the weapons of our warfare are not of the flesh, but divinely powerful for the destruction of fortresses. We are destroying speculations and every lofty thing raised up against the knowledge of God, and we are taking every thought captive to the obedience of Christ. And I've said this many times, not because I'm a former soldier, but because very simply, we are on a battlefield. Christianity, worshiping God, following God, is not about a social event. It is very social sometimes in structure, but it's not about the social event. And too many people think to themselves, well, I'm going to go to church today. We use that phrase all the time. It's said all the time. And the truth of the matter is, if you're not in the church before you get there, just because you show up doesn't mean you are. I think there's some folks who think, well, I'll be a soldier, but I'm just going to be one when I feel like being a soldier. Let me tell you something, it don't work that way. When you put the uniform on, when you make that commitment, if it comes to war, you're going. Now, we have conscientious objectors, and I've never figured out how a person transitions from a combat soldier to a conscientious objector because they don't want to go somewhere. That's not a conscientious objector. That's somebody making up an excuse. Because if you weren't a conscientious objector before, it's doubtful that just because a single decision is made, you're going to become one. There are lawful orders. You don't have to follow them. But in the history of the U.S. military, very few of those have ever been given, and none by supreme commanders. So when we talk about the battlefield we're on, don't think that you can be a part-time, well, I'll do it when I feel like it. I'll walk up here when I want to. And, you know, if it gets a little hairy, gets a little scary, I'm going to step back and let everybody else. And then on the end, on Judgment Day, when it comes time for the reward for the eternity, for the very thing I fought for and walked for and hoped for and prayed for, but you know, and you think the Lord's going to look at that and He's going to say, oh, well, that's all good. What He's going to do is point out to you the people who have made sacrifices, who have given their lives in some cases for their faith. You see that guy right there? And I could name any number of gory things that can happen to people because of their faith. See that guy? That's faith. Because he never changed what he said. He never altered his faith because his fear told him that's what he should do. And I think sometimes when we think about following God, we believe that we can play a role instead of be a genuine person. And that is unacceptable and really undoable from a spiritual standpoint. We're at war, folks. A lot has been done up to the present. Many people have stood for truth in the past. You can see it biblically, and I can tell you stories today of people who have, that modern times, people who have stood up for their faith and lost their life because they stood up for it. Jesus said, if you deny me, what? I'll deny you. Before my Father. He wasn't kidding. That's not a joke. And a lot of folks today are spiritual chameleons. They want to go out into the world and they want to look like the world. And whatever background is that they're up against, that's what they look like. We're not called to be chameleons. We're called to be lights in the darkness. If a light is anything, it's not a chameleon. Because if it was a chameleon in the darkness, what would happen to the light? It'd go out, right? It'd be dark. Or maybe in social situations where, you know, this is ambiguity and I don't know if I want to, the Lord would have me, and I don't, and so, yeah, just let me fall in with it. That's not fighting the battle, folks. That's running off of the battlefield. That's escaping. I want to ask you this. And I'm being personal now. Are you sitting when you ought to be fighting? Are you running off the battlefield when you ought to stand and fight on the battlefield? Now, I'm not judging anybody. I'm not your judge. I'm simply asking you to look in your own mirror and ask yourself that question. Are you sitting when you ought to be standing? Are you sitting when you ought to be marching? Are you allowing, tolerating things when you ought to be fighting against them? And I think sometimes too many people in this world think that the church ought to try to look more like the world so we'll win more of them. Well, that's just a bunch of junk. The very thing that attracts people to the church is the fact that we don't look like it. And when we start looking like it, they can't see us. That's one of the crazy things about a chameleon. I've even seen them guys that get on trees and their skin not only changes color, but they get spiky. They can change the texture. It's amazing. Spooky. I think there are churches today that you can't tell from any other secular organization that's out there. Because the people are afraid. We think, well, as long as they give us money, doesn't that make us right? As long as we're the richest church around or the biggest one in number, doesn't that mean we're the one? No. And I'm not against big churches. I'm not against folks that have money. But what I'm saying is, if that's what the goal is, if that's what the judgment is, if that's what the marker is, we've missed the point. Because the marker is whether or not we're faithful to the will of God. Just like Gad and Reuben. The question was not whether or not I've got flocks to lose or kids to protect or families I love, like other people don't love their families. They don't have kids and they don't have possessions. The question is, are you going to follow God's word and will in this world? Or are you going to go to Moses? Well, Moses, I'd like to. You know, I'd like to stay right here. Well, that's not really an option. What happens when we sit? What's the effect? First of all, according to Moses, we discourage our brethren. And it does happen. In most congregations in the church today, and it's true of any religious group you want to look at, this is a cross-denominational study, and the congregations you look at, most of them have what's known as a core group. The core group is the group that gets most of the work done. They'll also wind up contributing most of the money. They'll wind up projecting most of the focus and doing the vast majority of the work. That's called the core group. Most congregations, if I were to ask you, how big do you think the core group is? Some people would say, well, it must be at least 60, 70%. That would be a miraculous core group. Most core groups are under 30%. Most of them actually are under 10%. One out of every 10 people who claim to be Christians, religious, faithful, are actually active in their churches. And by active, all I'm saying is they are reading. They are studying. They are praying. They're talking to people about the Lord. That's our job, by the way, in case you... I mean, I know a lot of folks think, well, you know, we need folks to do everything from work on the building to teach, to do all... But the things we're supposed to be doing, without question, are spreading the gospel. That's our job. That's our assignment. That's what we do. When you go on the battlefield, I can imagine one of those soldiers, if he just showed up with a cotton candy stand, well, I'm going to sell cotton candy while y'all are all fighting. You are. I think his own people would have blown up his cotton candy stand. I think sometimes there are folks who think, well, I'm just going to do what I feel like doing. God's gifted me and my heart tells me I need to be the one who does blah, blah, blah. And it's not about what you think you need to do. It's about the job that needs to be done and how to get it done. It's not about what you feel like. Oh, but my heart, my emotions, my thing. You know what? Let me ask you one time in the Old Testament, When men are going into battle, okay, boys, all of y'all that feel like it, let's go. Where's that passage? In fact, if you're a sane person, nobody wants to go. I mean, that's just part of it. I used to jump out of airplanes. People would ask me, well, you must have, you know, and Stoney was telling me this morning a little joke about that, but jumping out of airplanes. Well, you must have, I had over 65 jumps, all kinds of weather situations, and every single time I went out the door, I was nervous. Well, yeah, but don't you get better at it? No. It really does. That's not a joke, Stoney. That's the truth. It doesn't get better the second time, the 200th time. It, when it gets better and it doesn't bother you is when you're going to die. Because you're not going to be paying attention to what you need to be paying attention to. But all that being said, well, doesn't knocking on a door or talking to a fellow worker or a family member about the Lord, doesn't that get easier as time goes on? Not really. Not really. It's always hard. But yeah, but it's easy for you. No, it's not. It's really not. It's hard. Everybody's got to do it. It's just hard. So when we think about what these folks are going through and the excuses they're given, and I ask you if you're sitting or you're going into battle, we need to answer that question. And if we're not doing what we should be doing, we need to repent. One thing I can say about Gad and Reuben is at least, and I don't know if it was because they were shamed or if it was because all the nation was looking at it. I don't know why they changed and why they renegotiated this whole process. But they did repent. And to be honest with you, maybe they realized when Moses got through talking to them that this wasn't as little of a deal as we might have thought it was. When you stand shoulder to shoulder with your brethren on the battlefield of life in this world, and we're doing the work of the Lord, you're going to find you're going to have one reception. But if you want to be on the periphery and on the edge, and you just want to look in, and a lot of folks sit out on the edge, we want to spectate. Well, let me tell you something about Christianity. It's not a spectator sport. There's no bleacher section. There's no, you can't stand on the ground and watch the game. No spectators allowed. It doesn't happen that way. And for too many people, I believe they think that it does. So what happens if we do sit? Well, first of all, we're told in Numbers 32:23 that we will have sinned against the Lord. That's a horrible thing, by the way. I mean, all sin is horrible. Sin against the Lord. In other words, that phrase is designed for us to understand, I have done something directly to and against God. All sin is that way. But this is an orchestrated, intentional event. It's one thing for me to be a person and fall down and skin my knee, spiritually speaking, and say, well, you know what, Lord, I fell, I messed up, I'm sorry, I'm coming back to you. That's one way of approaching life. But when I look God in the eye and I say, I don't care what you say, I'm not going. That's a sin against God, one for which I'm sure we don't want to be held accountable to. The last thing Moses says, he says, be sure your sin will what? Find you out. Oh, nobody's going to see me hiding in the crowd back here. How'd that work for Saul? Huh? Anybody remember that? King Saul, before he was king, hiding in the back. A man a head taller than everybody in the crowd. And he's going, hey, could you see him scrunching down? He's called. Did he say my name? He didn't say my name. I don't want him. No, he's talking about another Saul somewhere. That attitude is what cost Saul his kingdom. And I think sometimes for us, if we're not careful, attitudes that we excuse are also the very same things that can cost us our salvation. So this morning, and as we go into this new year, I want to encourage you to be a person who walks toward and in the will of God. Yes, you're going to be tired. There's going to be times when you get beat down. There's going to be times when things will hit you between your eyes, and it's going to hurt. I used to box and fight, and one of the things I found out, my superhero power was a lot like the cartoon character of the Tick. If you ever seen him, he's not that smart, and he's not that good at anything, but he can't be killed. And my secret superhero power was they couldn't knock me out, and it frustrated them. I'm not saying they couldn't today, but back then it was just hard to do. I never got knocked out. I got hit so hard a lot of times I wished I would have been knocked out. Because if you're knocked out, it doesn't hurt anymore. You know? There's times in our spiritual lives when we get hit hard. And we wish it didn't hurt, but it does hurt. There's a cost to your faith. There is a cost to walking through this world. That's not to say that all of it is bad. In fact, it's not. I'd say the vast majority is wonderful. But the truth of the matter is there are times when you take a punch. Maybe you saw it coming, maybe you didn't see it coming, but you're getting it. Folks, I hope and pray that as this battle rages, that we're soldiers who are in the fray. And that we find ourselves beside faithful people who are doing everything they can to live out the will of the Lord. And if we'll do that, when it comes time for us to meet the Lord in a very physical way on the day of judgment, as physical as that will be, then I think it will be a joyous reunion. It'll be a time that we'll be so glad that we made the sacrifices we made, walked the walk we walked, and did the things we had to do to live for the Lord. So this morning, if you have any need, if you're not a Christian, you desire to become one, if you are a Christian, and you'd like the prayers of this congregation, please come while we stand, while we sing.